interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Hump Day to you. And it is a Hump Day Wednesday, May 22nd edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back with you on 1037 The Game. I say back with you because, well, yours truly was out yesterday. Ben Love back in now with the famous Clint D and both of us inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We've got 2 hours today. Then we send you to Five Guys, Stories and Lies. Then we send you back out to Hoover where LSU baseball is still in full effect. I'll lead there momentarily, and you better keep your head on a swivel for a guest list today. We've got a usual suspect on a different day in a different time slot. More on that momentarily. But call in. You can talk some LSU baseball. A little Cajuns heartbreak as well. 706-0111. But first, well, when I'm out, I try to tell you why I'm out. And look, this isn't going to be as glamorous as some of the great sports injuries of all time. You've heard about, remember back in the day, I think Sammy Sosa injured himself sneezing. There's probably at least one guy or gal out there listening that says, hey, that's real serious. If you've got a back injury, I was out yesterday because I had oral surgery, had a wisdom tooth pulled. Probably should have had all of them, but with the amount of anesthesia that was going to take, it would have been B2BS minus Ben for quite some time this week. But here we are, less than 30 hours removed from having a tooth yanked out of my head. Right back at it, thrilled to be with you. Now let's get into the baseball. LSU last night went down 5-1. Did what they have done so many times before, and yet they pulled it out when they needed to. 8-6 was the final. You heard part of the call from Chris Blair. Tigers went up 8-5 at one point. And the big hero, I mean, the guy that rode in on the white horse and saved everyone's tookus was Devin Fontenot. No longer LSU's closer. He hasn't held that title in more than a month. But when they have a high-leverage situation, and I don't know that the stakes get a whole lot higher than last night, at least before you get into regional and super-regional play, certainly College World Series play. But Devin Fontenot had to pick up the slack for Cole Henry. Henry, the freshman from Alabama, pitched for the first time since April the 19th with elbow soreness. And while they said after the game, Manarian Dunn, that they were encouraged by his start, statistically, kind of the hole, if you will, that he left LSU in, well, it wasn't rosy, but it got a lot better after Devin Fontenot came in and stormed through Hoover, Alabama with 4 1/3 scoreless innings. That was a big-time performance, and that's the way that you build back some confidence. Oh, by the way, that's exactly how you save some of your starting arms for later in the week. Of course, it's twofold there, isn't it? Number one, there is such a thing as later in the week, and now two, you get to roll your guys out the way you want to. Credit also needs to be given Josh Smith hitting a tater, but more importantly, Cade Beloso. I won't say out of nowhere, because coming out of John Curtis, pretty sure he was the Gatorade Player of the Year in Louisiana last year. He was a known entity. You get recruited by LSU, yeah, you're pretty good. But this kid, Cade Beloso, is just smashing the baseball with regularity. 3 RBIs last night. He was pivotal in LSU's come-from-behind win. But what does it mean going forward? Tonight, Tigers get Mississippi State. First pitch, laugh out loud, expected for 8 p.m. But we know that they have Eric Walker lined up to go in this game. Last seen, Eric Walker was mowing down Auburn Tigers Thursday of a week ago inside Alec Box Stadium. If the Tigers should win there, or really even if they lose, look for Landon Marceau to get the call tomorrow. The scenarios are these. With the win today, LSU stays in that 8 p.m. time slot. They'll get the winner of Auburn-Vandy tomorrow at 8 p.m. With the loss today, it's the double elimination phase of the tournament. Tigers would stay alive. They play the loser of Auburn-Vandy at around noon 30 or 1 p.m. So LSU baseball, big picture, what does it mean? It means that they're likely one win away, in my estimation, from staking claim to a regional bid. And the type of claim that really there won't be a lot of questions surrounding. One more win. It could happen tonight. It could happen tomorrow. One more. That should just about do it. As for the Cajun side of things, well, there's not going to be a lot I could tell you that's going to make you feel better here. Because the Cajuns started to play some good baseball toward the very end. I mean, the tail end final stretch of the regular season. Able to win their first game against App State in the conference tournament. That one, like LSU's last night, was do or die. But for the Cajuns, those implications are a lot different. Today, UL had Georgia Southern on the ropes. Yes, they were trailing 2-0, then 2-1. But the reality is this. After the game got into extra innings, Tony Robichaud and company held a lead in the middle of the 11th and the middle of the 13th, and neither time could they bring home the bacon. Now, like LSU, since the Cajuns advanced Tuesday, today was not a single elimination game. But it does mean now that after they couldn't defend a Hanson Monica bomb in the 13th, after they gave up two runs in the bottom of the 13th, one on a wild pitch to tie it, the other on a sack bunt to win it, it means that the backs are even further up against the wall. The Cajuns will play Little Rock in an elimination game tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Central Time. So for LSU, they kept some very late season good vibes rolling into Hoover, and they'll get a chance to keep it going tonight against Mississippi State. Eric Walker on the mound. The Cajuns tomorrow at 8 a.m. are in a win or go home until, well, February of 2020 type of situation. So here's hoping the Cajuns can get it done and extend the season at least a little bit further. It was nice to watch Gunnar Leje come in dire relief and give him, what, four innings just about yesterday. Today, the end-of-the-line pitching staff just couldn't quite get them home. But the Cajuns will have an opportunity again tomorrow, 8 a.m. Get your Bloody Mary, a little bit of eggs and bacon, and watch the Cajuns take on Little Rock. All right, time for your guest list. We're excited about the show today. 4 to 6 p.m., we're trying to bring the goods. In our next segment, I think we have found somebody that would constitute such bravado. You know, you take a day off, somebody takes a damn tooth out of your head, you can't talk anymore. I'm going to get that back. Shay Dixon is coming aboard in the next segment. That's one way to stop talking as much. Bring on a great guest. We'll talk a little recruiting. We'll flip the script as well. We didn't have a Tuesday show, so you didn't get Shay. We're going to rectify that on the other side. So Shay Dixon, go 24-7 at 4:15. And live from Hoover, interrupting his golf outing, James Moran, Tiger Ag Magazine, at 5:30. I know, it's Wednesday, and we're bringing on a regular Tuesday guest, a regular Friday guy. It's just the way that the cookie crumbled. No Tuesday show for me this week, and Friday, well, we'll be at Minute Maid Park, so we'll excuse James from his appearance then. But on the other side, stick around, and we'll get you to Shay Dixon. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back and bringing you home on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station. And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game. Live online at 103.7thegame.com. Get in on the conversation. Call on the game hotline. 706-0111. 706-0111.
We're going to do things different.
Can we be just like we were?
We're going to flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shay Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know I'll flip.
Even on a Wednesday, it feels pretty sweet. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game, and it is time to flip the script. Shay Dixon, welcome back in, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here. How are you, sir?
Things are good here, but look, we just got the Coach O remix. That means it's time for your questions. I'm curious what you got up your sleeve today.
Well, look, we'll celebrate or at least pay tribute a hat tip to the Trendon Watford commitment, right? That LSU lands Watford, a five-star, their power forward they had been after all along, 6'9", 230 guy. And when you stack seven, sort of the
yeah, we're going to see if we can't get that back. Is that like the emergency watch system from Shea's phone there? We'll see if we can't bring him back. I know he wanted, from what I could tell there, to talk a little Trendon Watford and what's going on with LSU basketball, maybe what has been in the recent recruiting era vintage of LSU basketball. Interested to see exactly what he was driving at there, and hopefully he'll leave that hurricane warning from his phone alone a little bit. We'll see if we can't get Shea Dixon back momentarily. Don't forget, other side of this next break, sink or swim. We'll throw some shade in the 5 o'clock hour, and then James Moran live from Hoover. All right, Shea, we got you back in. Last we had you, you wanted to pay some homage to the Trendon Watford commit.
Yes. Well, look, I am looking at 24/7, the all-time commits in the modern era. So since 2000 for LSU, surprised or not, Watford is the seventh highest, number seven, rated signee LSU will have had in the past 19 years now.
A little, yeah. And I think that when we go down this list, it's going to show us that there were some under-recruited players, to be certain. But I'm a little surprised that he maybe would be the seventh best. I would have thought they maybe had a little more in the clip above him.
Well, I asked you, I said, look at the list. I said, you about 16 guys, right? And that goes all the way down into the Tremont Waters of the world. But number one, and deservingly so, correct, I would ask you, Ben Simmons, even though the year, I think, and I think LSU fans soured on him, right? But still, quick take, he belongs at one, right?
I'm going to say no.
No,
and I don't know if you want me to rattle off a top five now, but I'm going to say based off of performance for the player and the team, I'm going to say no.
Okay, so give me, based off performance and team, give me your handful of best, which would also mean most important signees. And we'll lead off by just saying this. Look, Simmons is in real life, I guess. You're going by their ranking. Simmons is at one, Jarrell Martin at two, Brandon Bass at three, Big Baby at four, and then Antonio Blakeney at five. So those are your five highest-ranked guys they've signed in that era.
And I'm going to put Brandon Bass at one for a number of different reasons. Shea, the guy played 2 years at LSU. One of them, he was the SEC Freshman of the Year. The other, he was the SEC Player of the Year. And no, his team didn't make it to the Final Four. That happened right after he left. But he helped as a building block to get the program where it's going. So in a lot of ways, you might actually be able to consider him sort of like a basketball equivalent to Kevin Falk. Now, it wasn't quite as trendy for in-state basketball players to go out of state from Louisiana as it was for football in the 90s, so Falk was probably a little more of a serious coup, all right? I have no doubt about that, but I could make a little bit of a comparison. Brandon Bass, in the John Brady era, helped to really get them off to a pretty hellacious start. Now, I know that even Stromile Swift came before him, but this Bass cat was something serious, man. Freshman of the Year, Player of the Year, and right from Capital High School in Louisiana. So I would put Brandon Bass at one. I'll put Ben Simmons at two. It's hard to deny. The guy was a consensus first-team All-American. I know that his team didn't accomplish nearly as much, but he was the number one player coming out of high school. A year later, he was the number one player coming out of college. He's been one of the most serious talents that'll ever have passed through the turnstiles. The problem for a lot of people, and I get it, that's exactly what he did. He passed through the turnstiles. He didn't really attempt to make his mark with the team while in Baton Rouge. And I've known the kid for quite some time. I would still tell him that to his face if we're having a conversation today. It's the plain truth. So I'd go Brandon Bass one, Ben Simmons two. Give me Big Baby at number three. So I'd have him stock up from where he's listed at number five coming into high school. SEC Freshman of the Year, made a Final Four, an iconic player in program history. And I bet this is what you were baiting, amigo. Give me Trey Waters at number four. And Waters was 16th of 16 on this list that you gave me, coming out of Notre Dame High School in West Haven, Connecticut. He was sensational in a two-year run in Baton Rouge. His first year had to carry the team. His second year, he was the lead dog on a 16-2 SEC team. Give me Trey Waters at four, and I'm going to chicken out a little here. I'll go tied for fifth, Jarrell Martin and Naz Reid. And I would say that Jordan Mickey was just a rung on the ladder below both of them. But I'll tell you this, going through this list that you provided was interesting because you come across names like Anthony Randolph, Magnum Roll. Both of those guys were consensus five-star players, Shay. I mean, Regis Kunja was a five-star player. Tack Minor coming out of the Dallas area is a four-star player. So sometimes they live up to it, sometimes they don't.
And is Naz Reid, Blakeney, those guys, that next wave? Tasman Mitchell, for instance.
Well, I guess that's why I took Jarrell Martin and Naz Reid. I got tied for fifth. So Reid, for me, I put him in the same kind of category as Jarrell Martin because at the end of the day, they'll probably both end up being late first-round picks. And so, again, Jarrell did it for 2 years, Naz for one, but both had a pretty similar impact down low. And, look, there's a guy that's not on this list that probably would be sixth, seventh, eighth for me if he were, and that's Johnny O'Brien. You and I remember covering him coming out of Cleveland, Mississippi.
So I guess the list sort of goes on forever. I guess it ranks, when I sent you over the list, I sent you 16, but he was 17 in terms of where they were ranked coming out of high school. So a lot of talent. Job 3, we couldn't go the whole segment without talking about him.
There you go.
Look, let's shift it a little bit. It's summer magazine season, right, like where they come out with all the preseason magazine. And I think it was Lindy's that did this, which it's anonymous coach season, SZN season, where all of your anonymous coaches, Ben, are out there giving their two cents without putting their name on it about teams. And I want to read you a quote, and you just say, look, buying or selling that. I don't think it's a big knock on, obviously. Sometimes we hear hotter takes. But this coach, presumably an SEC coach, said, Dave Aranda is a consistently good coach at LSU, as good of a defensive coordinator as there is in the SEC. This year, they're good defensively, but really, by their standards, not great. You buying or selling that? Because around here, I think people think that this defense has a chance to be really good.
It's a tough one. I'm kind of hedging my bet with my answer here because I could see where that person would say that based on elite first-round talent that's ready to come out and ready to go that are already household names, right? I guess here's what I mean. Coming into this season, everybody knew who Greedy Williams and Devin White were. I'm pretty sure coming into this season that everybody knows who Grant Delpit is. But yet you probably have to get out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. You probably have to get out of the boot for a lot of people to know who Michael Divinity is, who Caleb Von Chason is, and maybe even who Christian Fulton is. So sometimes we get paralyzed locally by thinking that the local stars out of high school are always going to be local stars in college, or because they're household names to us playing prep ball, that they're going to live up to that billing as collegiate players. Now, I think that to a certain extent, Chason was on his way toward becoming a national-level player. He was derailed by injury. Fulton was robbed of 2 years of his playing career. So in some of these instances, I can understand why they don't have the sexy names that have already done it and proven it in college that are coming back, and everybody says, whoa, they're future first-rounders. But what those people outside may not realize as well is that you've got a guy in Jacob Phillips returning who might be as productive as any of them next season, at least as far as on-field production goes. I think Jacob Phillips is going to be a monster in 2019. They're returning Fehoko, Lawrence. So unlike other LSU teams, they're actually going to have some veteran depth on the front line. So they may not have quite the sex appeal leading into this season, but they could be even a better defense because of some of the depth that I'm seeing and the experience depth, Shay. So if that makes sense, I'm buying what they're saying because they aren't quite as sexy on paper, but I'm selling because what you don't know outside may hurt you when LSU comes to town next fall.
I agree. I think that maybe the national perception of LSU is they'll learn a lot of these names that we're already familiar with. And like you said, from preps to college, do they make that transition? I think a lot of those guys that we're talking about will. For instance, will they make the transition from being sort of a situational player to being the guy? And I think that's what LSU's hoping. Boy, look. What does Vegas know now that they didn't know then? Because Bovada just updated their odds for the national championship, and the who's at the top. But LSU moves up from 50-1 odds to 20-1 odds. So this puts them at the seventh best odds. And look, I'll put it in perspective for you. Bama, Clemson are 1-2. We knew that would happen. Georgia is the next best odds. We're not surprised by that. Then you throw in Ohio State and Michigan, you're sort of copping out, right? You put them both at about the same odds. One of them is going to wind up in the national conversation. And then they did the same with Oklahoma. That's understood. They could have the path right through like they did a year ago. And then it's LSU. So what happened over the past 3-4 months through spring ball? Did people hear, see, think maybe about LSU or others, but to now say, look, LSU is a legitimate, you know, seventh, eighth best odds in the country to win it all?
Couple of Joes, I think. Brady and Burrow. I mean, seriously, what else has changed? We understand that Joe Brady comes in, brings some of what the Saints had going offensively in New Orleans. He's helping to streamline a passing game, and then there's continuity with Joe Burrow and everybody that is kind of trusted with LSU's offensive play calling and offensive blueprinting. I think that's all that it is, and people came out of spring talking. Coaches talk. I mean, reporters nationally get to go and duck in and see some of these things. I think they saw that LSU's got a leader at quarterback who's returning. He's in sync with his coordinator, and they're bringing in somebody who actually may kind of help an evolutionary path of the offense for the Tigers. So I can't help but to think that it's a couple of Joes that's leading this. And isn't it interesting that I just mentioned sometimes regionally and nationally, they don't know what's happening locally. This would be a case of the opposite, wouldn't it, Shea? It seems like they're getting in on the secret. And that also seems about right for me. I think LSU should be preseason about 7 to 10 or 11. And so them falling in line there with the national championship odds, to me, makes a decent amount of sense.
Well, I gave you 7, right, and they're tied with Auburn. Auburn's catching the same 20-1 odds now. And I'll give you up to 10 as well, or at least I'll give you the rest. So it was like Auburn, Texas, Notre Dame, Washington. So if that's sort of the next group up, are you still standing by that? That's where LSU belongs for now, until week two at least, at the beginning of that conversation.
Yeah, no doubt. LSU will be better than Auburn this year, and we'll find out. Like you said, week two, if LSU is better than Texas, that game is not the be-all, end-all of LSU season, but it'll be one hell of an indicator. Shea, this was fun, even on a Wednesday. Thank you, my man.
Absolutely. Glad to be on any day of the week.
Shea Dixon, go247.com. I'll hit the break, ponder a little bit if that noise was Shea getting a call coming in. If so, got to have a conversation with the provider there, guy. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back on 103.7 The Game.
Stop yapping and get back to work.
Okay, everyone, let's get back.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
You're basically asking me if I would love having a Pro Bowl defensive tackle that I've spent the last 8 years trying to run around and avoid and not have hit me to join our team. Yeah, of course.
Drew Brees on the possibility of having former Buck Gerald McCoy on the roster. And how about this? Breezes last night and yesterday in the Hub City. 103.7 The Game was there. We've got some sound. We want to roll it out for you. Right about now, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we are back in on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Already had Shea Dixon aboard. If you want to respond to that or you want to get in on the Saints conversation, we got some time. 706-0111. I missed you yesterday. My apologies. I was busy having a wisdom tooth yanked out of my head. I'm back in today. Yeah, some soreness, some swelling. Hopefully the sound is just about right for you, though. And, Clint, before we get to our daily sink or swim question, I want one more from Breeze. And this one, it shares his thoughts on the foundation of the Saints' offense and what they continue to be built on.
I love the foundation that we have as a team right now, both on offense and defense. I love I love the weapons that we have, you know, offensively, adding some of those guys. You know, Jared Cook, we just started OTAs, you know, so having the opportunity to work with some of these guys for the first time now in a practice-type setting is always fun, because you start to see, okay, I see how we're going to use this guy, right? Or I see his talent. Man, maybe we're going to be able to do some things we haven't been able to do in the past, you know, or recently. So I'm always excited to start the year, because it's always a new year, right? And you got to reestablish your identity, and you see the young guys and even the veteran guy, or the, you know, the guys who've been there for years. It's guys continuing to take the next step, you know, and us to evolve as an offense too. You know, every offseason we know that we have to stay on the cutting edge. You know, we always have to stay ahead of the curve. We know people are gunning for us, and so we've got to have some new wrinkles, and so we'll have some.
And so even without Joe Brady, who we brought up in the last segment talking LSU football, the Saints' offensive brain trust that starts with Sean Payton and trickles down, and you don't get too far down the hierarchy there before you get to Drew Brees, they feel pretty good going into this year. And already, within the last 3 to 4 weeks, I've asked you some questions about this Saints team, the entire roster, and whether or not they're maybe in better shape in 2019 than 2018. This question is going to be a little different. I'll get to that here after the music. Let's go to an individual player for this one, shall we? Your sink or swim question of the day. Will Drew Brees have a better 2019 season than he did in 2018? Again, the number to play, 706-0111. Ken is going to lead us off. He's aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm going to say he's going to have a better season. I think they'll be highly motivated because of what happened to them last year. So I think he's going to have a pretty darn good season. And, you know, of course, I'm picking him to go to the Super Bowl this year and win it all. So, but I want to ask you some other stuff about Calvin Joseph. I wanted to allude to the question you had earlier with your guest. I think the LSU will have a better defense than it was last year with their concerning the depth and the talent. People will know them after week two, trust me. And that's all I got, Ben. Thank you.
Ken, you got it. And now we're really going at this from two different angles, aren't we? Is LSU's defense going to be better than last year? And then my sink or swim question, will Drew Brees be better than last year? Again, we'd love to hear from you on both of those. We don't have another scheduled guest until James Moran from Tiger Egg Magazine. He's out in Hoover. I think he's done playing golf. Of course, he's got a while. LSU Mississippi State don't begin until like 8 p.m. We'll have James at 5:30. Clint, I'm going to hog the mic here. You know, you take 2 hours off in the week, and you kind of want to get some talking out. I think Brees statistically may well have a worse season. I think offensively and as a team, they will be better this season. And I'm sure Saints fans will live with that. Let us not forget, Drew Brees, through about 10 weeks of the 2018 season, was the MVP. Period. Pat Mahomes was kind of close. A few other guys in the conversation. Brees was the best doing it on the best team through about 9 or 10 weeks. Then he went through a little bit of a lull. Faced some good defenses. Yep, played on some short turnarounds. Bunch of Thursday games, right? But then also, the thing we all like to point to, maybe lost some arm strength. My hope, and frankly, with guys that smart in the room like Sean Payton, my expectation for this Saints season is that Brees' workload, his arm, is managed better between the Monday night game against the Texans to start thing off in September and basically the first or second week of November. My expectation is he's managed better during that period of time. Some of it last year wasn't his fault and wasn't the fault of the people pulling the strings offensively. Without Mark Ingram, they got to be a wee bit one-dimensional for the first four games. Kamara, as great as he is, I don't think was able to completely take the reins of the running back position and give them the physicality between the tackles and then everything else that he normally does. Makes sense. If you ask one guy to fill the shoes of two men, it's not possible. I think, with a more stacked deck this year, with Jared Cook at the tight end position, you just heard Breeze allude to him, I think that they're going to be able to run the ball more effectively this year. They'll run it more often. And I get the feeling that while Breeze may not statistically be in the MVP race as he was for so long last year, I think they're going to be a little bit more balanced offensively, a little more December and on ready. I'm like Ken. Right now, this feels like a Super Bowl caliber team to me. That would be one step further, actually two, than a year ago. So I'm going to say that Breeze doesn't have the same level of statistical production, but that he is going to be on a team and an offense that performs better than a year ago. All right, Clint, what say you?
You know, for me, I got to wind up saying swim as well. It's just my biggest thing is it's going to take a little bit for kind of this team to build some chemistry, especially when you look at the relationship between Drew Brees and whomever's going to be the starting center, because I feel like that's the biggest thing. We talk about offensive line and continuity. That's been a big talking point for me for the last few years, is the fact you have a guy like Max Unger that gives a lot of continuity, a lot of leadership. I don't think you can wind up getting that day one from a guy like Eric McCoy with a lot of these veterans around him. So I think he's going to have to step his game up, or whomever is going to wind up being the starting center week one. And I think another thing that's going to wind up affecting this team is probably going to wind up being the fact you brought it up perfectly, Mark Ingram. Mark Ingram brought up a lot of that duality, was able to have you be able to have that ability to kind of flex around and move some things in terms of offense, have Mark Ingram and Kamara share the load. Can we see Latavius Murray be in that role?
Breeze last year, 8 yards shy of 4,000 through the air. So by no means his most prolific in terms of ripping off chunks of yardage. But he did go 32-5 in terms of touchdown to interception ratio. That is freaking outstanding. And I know that the volume in terms of the touchdowns dropped off toward the end of the season, but 32-5 is the best of the Drew Brees era. Not just in New Orleans, it's the best of Brees' career. I mean, you go back to, 2001, his first year in the league with the San Diego Chargers. He's never had a season that anywhere remotely has approached this. 2004 with the Chargers, he was 27-7. And that's strictly touchdown to interception ratio. He has had a couple of years, two of them, in fact, with the Saints where he's gone over 40 touchdown passes. Hey, that's phenomenal. But they were accompanied by 19 and 16 interceptions. 32-5 last year. If he could find a way to maintain that level of efficiency and then be a little more durable toward the end, I think that's the ticket. I think that's what they're looking for. And I do think they're going to get it this year. All right, we're going to take our final break in hour number one. I need more from YP, you people out there in listener land. Is Breeze going to be better in 19 than 18? And do you think that LSU's defense is going to take a step back, as one anonymous SEC coach said in a summer mag? Imagine that. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back in quick, fast, and in a hurry on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 1037 The Game.
All right, you've got football topics galore for the end of May, but I know UL baseball lost today, still stayed alive, and LSU baseball trying to do the same. Over the next couple of days in Hoover, we need to get back to the diamond. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, back in on 103.7 The Game. LSU wins last night, and yet Cole Henry, not at his best. I'm okay with that, knowing that they're going to need him. But I want you to hear from the young man. I guess this is the part that's important. When you go from April 19 to May 21 without pitching in a game, it's probably pretty important that you come out the other side and you're feeling good.
Just getting back out there and feeling like myself again just feels great. So hopefully I'll get another opportunity at the end of this week if we go deep and in the regional too. So,
so you feel like at this point you're kind of back up and running where you can be a factor in the postseason in terms of the NCAA tournament?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I 100% plan on pitching in the regional and super regional and Omaha, wherever we go. So I'll be a part of whatever we do.
The Acadiana area's own Jacques Doucet striking there from Hoover, Alabama. So Cole Henry back in his home state gets LSU off to a start. Not the best of starts in fairness, but he feels good, and that's important because, again, I'll repeat, they're going to need him. But Devin Fontenot, 4 1/3 scoreless innings, he rescued the Tigers in that ball game. And afterwards, he reflected on exactly what he got accomplished. Here's LSU reliever Devin Fontenot.
You know, these last two outings that I had, and one was both of them were starts. You know, kind of got my momentum back, and I knew that this was a big game for the team, and I was going to do anything I could to, step up and give us however many innings I needed today.
Let's get another from Fontenot. He recognizes the importance of the win that LSU just got. I think externally, we would all talk about hosting regional play. We would talk about great form going into the postseason. Some of that on these players is lost a little bit, right? They've got the blinders on like the horses you see out there. But they know, and Devin Fontenot tells you here, we needed this one.
You know, I know this was a huge win. You win today, you get to stay here for a couple more days. You know, we got Mississippi State tomorrow, so we're really excited for that. And we know that if we, you know, make a run here, we should be able to host. And, you know, the people in BR would love to see us back in Baton Rouge for a regional.
I asked the question Monday in our 4 o'clock hour, does this feel like an LSU team that's about to catch fire, right? Does it feel like they're about to go on a roll? Minimal response. Be curious. One game in. You saw a W. Do you feel any differently now? We got time for you. Talk a little football or baseball on a hump day. 706-0111. I think this. They didn't have to burn many of their necessary pitchers, right? They didn't have to dip into the wells to go to Walker, who will start tonight. Marceau, who will start tomorrow. Zach Hess got to maybe think a little bit more on where he's at, his performance. So I guess a lot of the guys that we might point to, even Todd Peterson, a lot of the guys we might normally point to and say, okay, in a pretty necessary game, an important game, Maneri Dunn may go to them kind of almost in second nature. They didn't hit the panic button last night. They didn't have to do that, but they did get some confidence built back into Devin Fontenot. And then obviously the offensive production didn't hurt either. Josh Smith with the leadoff homer, Cade Beloso with 3 RBIs. As far as the head coach, Paul Maneri also sounded off after the game. Here are his thoughts on the opening round win.
Can't even put into words how important that is. You know, I told the guys if we had to leave tomorrow morning and had to practice the rest of the week, the practices were not going to be a lot of fun. I can assure you that. I remember one year South Carolina, ironically, Ray Tanner lost like in 2 games, and I remember him storming out of the lobby of the Winfrey over there, and I tried to say goodbye to him, and he just, you know, I don't think practice was going to be a lot of fun for their team the rest of the week, and I didn't want to do that. You know, we love Hoover, and we love coming to this tournament. It's such a great event, really. And plus, you know, maybe most importantly, I know everybody's talking about hosting and all that stuff, but maybe most importantly, to get Walker another start, to get Marceau another start. And I just think that's really critical to let them pitch in this environment. And I think that'll just help us for next weekend a lot.
Completely agree. And again, they're not always just focused on hosting the regional. Sometimes that's more of an external thing. But as a coach, you can understand where Paul Maneri is almost solely focused on the form, the health of his roster. And in the case of Marceau and Walker, I mean, let's be honest. If I'd have taken you back to the beginning of this season, you'd have said that LSU was going to rely on, probably in order, Zach Hess, and this would have been the Friday through Sunday rotation, Zach Hess, Landon Marceau, Eric Walker. That was with the understanding that we really hadn't seen Jaden Hill yet. We hadn't seen Cole Henry yet. We didn't know about the health of Mikhail Hilliard. So many of the arms that LSU, maybe in other circumstances, would rely on. There's even been the on-again, off-again thread with Todd Peterson being an early guy, right? Maybe even a starter at times. Here we are. And in order, they're trying to get prepared to be their number one and number two starters for postseason play. They're working on Eric Walker and Landon Marceau. So, yeah, okay, it's two of the three guys, but in a different order. And they both have bounced around in terms of arm injuries, in terms of performance, and when they've been on and when they've been a little bit less than on. And so LSU baseball, with an opportunity, I believe, they win tonight and they host. More than that, they win tonight and they get a chance to play Auburn, who they just took two out of three from, almost swept. Vandy, who is really good, but maybe not insurmountable. I don't think this is previous year's Vandy, just like it isn't previous year's Florida LSU. So a win tonight not only maybe clinches a regional, but it also gets you a winner's bracket, kind of virtually a semifinal game, right? Thursday night at 8 p.m. And boy, wouldn't it be sweet if LSU got to play Auburn again in that game. And if Landon Marceau, who was the SEC co-freshman of the week the last time he went out against Auburn, wouldn't it be sweet if he got to go out and pitch against them in the state of Alabama? So the Tigers trending in a good direction. They've got more work to do. UL, on the other hand, absolute heartbreak for the Cajuns earlier today. In case you're just tuning in, you haven't seen it, Cajuns beat App State yesterday. Today, they had a midday start against Georgia Southern. Trailed for a bunch of the ball game. 2-0, then 2-1. Ended up sending it to extra innings. And the painful part is this. The Cajuns held a lead in the 11th and the 13th. Hard to do that and not get home. But ultimately, they couldn't. And in the top of the 13th, Handsome Monica went yard. And you felt really good about that. Georgia Southern burned UL in the most painful way down the stretch. Bottom of the 13th, game tying run came via a wild pitch. Sacrifice bunt was the winning play for the Eagles. And so UL, they're not eliminated yet. Their season's not over yet, but they can't lose again in Conway, South Carolina. Cage is going to take on Little Rock in an elimination game tomorrow, 8 a.m. Central Time from the home of the Chanticleers. All right, enough of the baseball for now. CD, let's get to the end of this hour with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Soon, as in within 48 hours, this show will be live from Minute Maid Park again. I'm happy to get back there sooner than later. We've got some great guests that are scheduled for it. Hey, but enough of the promo work. All I can tell you, I just want to get back onto that field. It's one of the coolest things is when you get to walk around. Any of you have done it before at a major league park, hallowed grounds, and Minute Maid, as good a park, I think, as there is in the country. So I'm happy that, again, soon I'll be back at the Juice Box. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. They're your final stop to fill the stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. We'll be right back in. James Moran at 5:30. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running on a hump day. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben Love and Clint Domingue bringing you home. Hour two of two, setting sail on 103.7 The Game. Happy to hear from you between now and 6 o'clock. Dial us up when you're ready. We've got a couple of questions on the table. The number to play, 706-0111. The questions are these. Is LSU's defense going to be worse next year on the gridiron? Interesting. One scout, or I should say one assistant coach, according to Shea Dixon, he came on, told us in hour number one, it's summer mag season, and one anonymous assistant coach in the SEC insinuated that Dave Aranda may be great, but LSU doesn't quite have the horses this year. So do you think LSU's defense is going to take a dip? And similar question, but about an individual player, is Drew Brees going to be better in 2019 than in 18? Both of those questions on the table for you. We let off with a lot of baseball talk. Went well last night for LSU. They'll have another chance tonight to stay undefeated in Hoover. Eric Walker will be on the mound tonight. Landon Marceau will pitch either in a virtual semifinal game tomorrow night or in an elimination game tomorrow midday. On the UL side, Cajuns lost a heartbreaker, 6-5 in 13 innings earlier today to Georgia Southern. They will take on Little Rock in an elimination game tomorrow, 8 a.m. Central Time in Conway, South Carolina. So while we will converse and discuss LSU or UL baseball, we certainly want your answers to those questions we asked. There's another topic I wanted to get to at the top of our 5 o'clock hour. Roger Goodell and the NFL announced today future NFL draft locations. One of them we already knew. It was reiterated. And, Clint, I didn't see this, actually. Next year's draft is going to be in Vegas, baby. That should be amazing. And I have to imagine the impetus there is, all right, well, let's go where the Raiders are going to be. Let's help to kind of kick off and, you know, give an inaugural celebration of the franchise. So 2020, the NFL draft will be in Vegas, but announced today, 2021, it'll be in Cleveland. 2023, it'll be in Kansas City. Word on the streets is expect 2022 to be a major city. Didn't exactly sound convincing to me, like New Orleans might be in the running there. But what do you make out of that, CD? 3 out of the next 4 years, we saw a lot of fun in Nashville this year. It'll be Vegas, Cleveland, Kansas City.
I love that, especially the Vegas one, and I have to agree with you. It's probably largely because of the fact that the Vegas Raiders are going to be moving in 2020, trying to get people hyped up for it. I think it's going to be a great venue to have it at. And then you look at Cleveland. Cleveland's on the come up, and I'm intrigued by that one a little bit more. But Kansas City, that's a place that's going to be rocking, because this is the place where they're actually going to be hosting it at, was where they had the celebration for when the Royals won the World Series, and they had a packed house over there for that. So you can about imagine how much more it could be for Casey Moe coming up in 2023.
You know, that's one thing I would say in comment to what Goodell and the NFL released today. They went with Cleveland, the new up-and-coming team, which frankly is largely doing it outside of the draft, with the exception of Baker Mayfield. And they're going with Kansas City, who was Cleveland before there was Cleveland, right? And a lot of the national pundits are making the understandable observation that Kansas City, the star power that Andy Reid's got at the top now with the reigning MVP, Patrick Mahomes, that this is the NFL acknowledging the star power, trying to get next to it, trying to squeeze whatever they can out of it. So it's interesting to me. An individual player at Kansas City can maybe help elevate them to where they are a wanted commodity. And everything that Cleveland is doing in the offseason, right, bringing in Odell Beckham, their star power is being recognized as well. And it's funny that we always think of the phrase destination city. And in pro sports to us, I mean, I think we all know why, that means free agents. Destination city. I think with something like these, you know, on location NFL drafts, it means a little bit more than just that. Destination city. Well, suddenly, it's not just Miami and Phoenix and LA, maybe Seattle. It's not just some of these kind of perennial places to be where the NFL is choosing to have events like this, but Cleveland and Kansas City, those have become destination cities, I guess, not only just for the free agents, but also now for things like NFL draft locations. But God, would I love to see the Saints and the city of New Orleans host that event. It would be amazing. And there are so many places in New Orleans that you could put that thing and it would still make sense. One of the worst places you could probably put it would be like Superdome adjacent. Unless maybe you did like Champion Square or something. I can see where that might be okay. But you could host that thing in New Orleans at places that would just be absolutely hysterical. And not just from a comedic standpoint, but it'd be a lot of fun as well. It'd play great on TV. It'd be, I mean, all the fun in the world in person. I'm hoping New Orleans can pull that off. But again, some of the things that were suggested a few weeks back when it was hosted in Nashville are that it might be a logistical nightmare for New Orleans to pull that off with Jazz Fest and some of the other things that come through New Orleans. I'm still crying rubbish on that one. But since I got to New Orleans, we played you a little Drew Brees sound in hour number one. I want to run back a little bit more because he said something else to me that was intriguing. Quarterbacks that are sub 6 foot, and he qualifies, have begun, more and more to kind of gain a foothold in this league. But guys like Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield maybe have a bit of a different skill set, I think we all would agree, than Brees. In this clip, Brees discusses exactly how those two in particular, the last two Heisman Trophy winners, both Oklahoma Sooners, how these two are breaking the mold.
It gets people past the perception of what a quarterback's supposed to look like, right? For a long time, people were so focused on the measurables, we call them, right? So the size, the speed, the, you know, the velocity or how far you could throw or, you know, just how you looked, right, or how you appeared. And yet there's so much more that goes into the quarterback position from a leadership perspective and just being able to absorb all that comes with playing the position. And so a lot of it's here and here, and you can't just measure that. You got to watch a guy. You got to be around a guy. And so I think it's great that, you know, you have guys now like Baker Mayfield, right? I mean, he's kind of in that 6'1", 6 foot category. Kyler Murray. So really two in a row, first picks of the draft, right? Guys that are outside of the, you know, realm of the prototype guy. And I think those guys are proven that, you know, this is maybe the new age of quarterback.
I hope it's true. And I hope we stop discussing it as much. That's one of my least favorite parts of every NFL draft, especially lately, is hand size and height at that position, right? Might be a little different if we were talking about, I don't know, an edge rusher. But even that is a little bit subjective. I think Dwight Freeney helped to kind of change and break the mold there. So, I don't know. Every time the combine comes and goes, we make our way to the draft and we overanalyze the height of somebody like Baker Mayfield. Oh, what's his hand size? How big are his fingers? Just turn on the tape. Can the guy play? And does it translate to your system and to the league? Those should be the only questions that matter. All right, we got a busy rest of the 5 o'clock hour that's coming at you. We're going to throw a little shade when we return. And then live from Hoover, Alabama, fresh off a Robert Trent Jones golf course round. Yeah, James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine. We're going to talk LSU, Mississippi State at 5:30. Don't forget, it's going to be a great afternoon into an evening on Acadiana Sports Station. At 6 o'clock, it's Five Guys, Stories and Lies, Captain by Don Allen. And whenever LSU baseball is ready, we will take you there. As currently scheduled, first pitch from Hoover is at 8. The pregame show would begin at 7:30. But you and I know that will be in flux. We're coming right back in and bringing the shade with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Let's go, people.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Get in on the conversation.
Call on the game hotline.
706-0111.
706-0111.
Today's shade, I think, will be fun for everybody. And it might just lead us to arguing a little bit, if we're lucky. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Ben and Clint bringing you home and right back in on 103.7 The Game. Still plenty of time before Five Guys, Stories and Lies at 6 o'clock. You want your opinion heard? We do have time for your word. Call us up, 706-0111. The shade is twofold today, CD. But before we get there, I'll issue everybody's daily reminder. It's a PSA locally that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the Cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers. You can not only trust them inside your home, You can trust them to beautify life outside of your home. Alex will put up the shades and awnings while Todd takes care of the installation of your patio covers and those customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready up your patio game. All it takes to start is a trip to PatioCenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at PatioCenter.com.
We've got a much more miniature version of Spike Lee v. Reggie Miller that's going on in the Eastern Conference Finals. In case you haven't noticed, and I know Golden State swept their way through Portland, they're already into the battle for the Larry O'Brien Trophy. They're in the finals. It's knotted at two right now between Toronto and Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Finals. After last night, both sides have won twice on their home floor. But what I found most interesting, Drake, yes, front-running rapper Drake, who will wear any jersey, any sweater, any ball cap of a team that is balling until they, you know, stop balling and then he stops wearing it. There's only one franchise and really one city for which that doesn't hold true. Drake, who is a native of Toronto, loves him some Toronto Raptors. So much so that you used to literally see him basically adjacent to the Raptors huddle, almost talking to the Raptors coach mid-game. Some pretty embarrassing stuff. This time around, he has set his sights on a guy that I believe is about to win the league MVP. Drake has set his sights on Giannis Antetokounmpo, known to you and me and heretofore pronounced as the Greek Freak. And the Greek Freak has not been having a great Eastern Conference Finals. Not even a little bit. A guy that, before Giannis left Europe, a guy that used to be Giannis's agent, he's now a senior exec for Octagon. It's the agency that represents the Greek Freak. He had some things to say earlier today on Twitter. He has never seen anything as disrespectful as the way Drake is trolling the Greek Freak. Here's your exact tweet. And it does paint an interesting picture. I think it'll give us something to maybe go back and forth on as well. Here's the tweet. Imagine a gig and an athlete on VIP seats right next to the band stands up on the stage just to show off during the entire game, knowing cameras are on him, occasionally even massaging the singer. Security and him both allow it. I've never seen anything as disrespectful as this before. And there are plenty of pictures that you could see Drake almost having to be restrained by personnel on site at the Toronto Arena. I mean, he is pointing at Giannis, giving him the business within just a couple of mere feet of him. I find this whole thing very interesting because Drake is publicly trolling and chastising the best player in the NBA this season, at least, and the former agent, the guy that still works on the representation team for Giannis, is crying foul, saying that it's disrespectful. Well, I don't know. I think everybody almost unanimously looks back at Reggie Miller giving the choke sign to Spike Lee. Spike Lee giving the business back to him. I mean, they're doing 30 for 30s on this crap like 25 years later. People eat it up. I wonder if it's just a matter of some time, right, in hindsight. Or is there any real difference? Because this guy that represents Giannis, he ain't happy about it at all. But maybe those are just the breaks. And maybe in a couple of years we'll look back on this and it'll be funny. I wonder if you think it's fair or foul, but it's definitely some shade thrown. And here's your two-parter. The second part will be quick. Monday, early afternoon, I learned that I had a badly impacted wisdom tooth. Had some others, but they weren't impacted. No problem. And basically what I was told is, you know, if you have them all taken out, you're going to have to be put under with a good bit of anesthesia, and you probably won't be able to do your show for a couple of days. Can't have that, Doc. Got to be at the tap room on Thursday. Going to Minute Maid, baby, on Friday. We can't have that. And so he said, I tell you what, we can just take out the one that's hurting you, and you may even be back for the show that day. Sweet. So yesterday at 9:30, had it taken out. Yesterday by about 11:30, it was abundantly clear to me I would not be talking to you on the radio. So a little bit of retroactive shade at me for thinking that I'd be able to do a show less than like 5 or 6 hours after going under the knife. Silly rabbit. Tricks are for kids.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PetioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
Clinton, you could have actually gotten, finally, we joked about it a couple of years ago on a holiday show, you could have actually gotten B2BS Chopped at Scrooge yesterday. That would have been very real.
Oh, that would have been very real and probably very entertaining, mind you. I don't think necessarily Acadiana would have been ready for what was going to happen that day.
Can you imagine me breaking down LSU-South Carolina baseball, which is already fairly low on a guy like my totem pole? I like college baseball, you know, don't get me wrong. Probably not as much as many of you listening. I prefer the pro game. And then above that basketball, and then above that football.
Yeah.
Right? Could you imagine me trying to talk my way through LSU South Kakalaka on a little bit of a mini bender?
Yeah.
With gauze just packed into one side of my mouth.
That would have been amazing, honestly. That would have been a lot of fun just to have me and you going back and forth talking about it.
My brother-in-law had to come over during a portion of the day and make sure that I was basically not drowning in my own blood yesterday. And, you know, somebody has to drive you home from something like that. He said, it looks like you have the world's biggest chaw in right now. So anybody out there who's had wisdom tooth or teeth extracted, you could probably feel my pain. Still a decent bit of soreness, not going to lie to you. Definitely some swelling going on right now. But if I continue the baseball analogy, I don't quite look like any of the characters from the Simpsons baseball episode.
You don't have the gigantism like Ken Griffey Jr. had?
I do not have gigantism like Ken Griffey there. I don't have, like, normal Barry Bonds face post, like, 1996. So there's definitely some swelling that's going on, but it's not gigantism. I haven't been put under by Monty Burns just yet.
Yeah, you haven't been put under. You're looking good after that, man. You're looking good.
All right, now you made it weird.
Yeah, I did.
Now you made it a little too weird.
That's a specialty. We've been doing this for 4 years, Ben.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's true. Sunday is the 26th, and that will make 4 years of Bumper to Bumper Sports. So
it sneaks up on you.
Yeah, well, thanks for making it weird. I appreciate that. Here I was having a fairly normal day, just mixed in with some tooth pain. Can't take any of the pain pills because I'm driving myself to and from. So 6 o'clock. Hello. It's going to be smooth sailing. Get into a little bit of after-work activity and just try to make my way through the evening. Be back tomorrow. Should be full strength by then. Hopefully today it sounds full strength. Tomorrow, hopefully, I'll sound and feel full strength. That would be a step forward.
You sounded full strength right about now, man. You've been hanging tight for like the last hour and a half.
Just got to keep fooling them out there.
Yeah.
Got to find my way to keep fooling them a little bit. Hey, we're doing what we can. What I do know is that we're taking you out to Hoover, Alabama on the other side of this break. James Moran, editor of Tiger Rag Magazine. He's coming off a round of golf. We'll see how it went for him. And then more than that, we're going to preview LSU Mississippi State. The way that this thing is starting to line up for the Tigers, how far they could go in Hoover, and just how high that might help Paul Mainieri and company to climb going toward the postseason. I could have predicted this bumper music. That's fine. Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back in on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Yeah, we're in a rush to get back to our program. I don't think our next guest will be in much of one. He just played golf, LSU baseball. They're not going to go until like 8 o'clock. So it's the perfect time. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in on 103.7 The Game. The perfect time to go aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline to find live from Hoover, Alabama, James Moran of Tiger Rag Magazine. How are you, James?
Doing well, Ben. Doing well. How about yourself?
Things are good here. Tell me about the round of golf, where you played, how it treated you, the whole thing.
We played Oxmoor Valley. It's a Robert Trent Jones course here in scenic Hoover. Didn't play too badly. Played better on the front than the back. The short game was on point today, Ben.
There you go.
Saved a lot of strokes and hit the balls in some bad places.
I've played at Ross Bridge out there, just kind of south of Hoover. It didn't treat me very well. So it sounds like your round went better than most of mine did out there.
Yeah, it was tough. I'll say that. It was a big, mountainy, hilly course, and I hit the ball in some interesting places, but got up and down to save some decent numbers.
It's always fun when you leave Louisiana and you remember, oh, yes, there are hills. All right, let's talk about baseball and the guy that took the hill last night, at least to start off, Cole Henry. I know that it didn't look terribly good on the stat line, but I'm not sure that was really the biggest reason they sent him out there, right? I think they wanted him to kind of build his sea legs back up, so to speak. What did you make out of his performance and kind of maybe how he projects going toward the postseason?
Yeah, in real time, I didn't think he threw the ball that well, but when we talked to Paul Manier and we talked to him, it was pretty obvious that they were thinking more just wanting to see him get out there and get through the day healthy, and that was the most important thing. But he threw the ball well. I mean, he was throwing 94, 95 like he had been before he got hurt. His curveball looked a little rusty. That was probably the biggest thing that held him back. But I think the plan is that he's probably going to pitch a game in the regional. And there's a chance he could pitch a game before things are wrapped up here in Hoover if LSU makes it to the weekend. But I would think overall it was an encouraging sign to see him just out there pitching, because obviously, you know, when you look at where LSU is right now, you feel good about Eric Walker and Landon Marceau. But if you could add Cole Henry to that mix as a third starter, even if he can't get that deep into games, then you feel a lot better about this pitching staff and how they set up for a regional.
Now, what was encouraging was Devin Fontenot, and his role has kind of bounced around a little bit this year. At one point, the closer on this team, how much do you think they may be able to bring him back within this SEC tournament, and I guess the confidence that was maybe instilled in him, reinstilled going toward the postseason?
Yeah, I think it'll probably be another day or two before they could bring him back. He threw, I think, 60-something pitches last night, so I obviously he's not going to pitch today. I kind of doubt he'd be able to pitch tomorrow either, but I just thought the way he threw the ball was so encouraging. You know, I mean, if you look at the kind of the core of this LSU pitching staff, you want to have Walker, Marceau, and Henry as your starters, and then, you know, Fontenot, Matt Beck, and obviously Todd Peterson and Zach Hess is kind of the core of your bullpen. And to get Fontenot back throwing the ball well, I thought was really important. He started on Saturday and threw two really good innings, and then obviously last night he was just absolutely dominant. I mean, he came in with LSU down 5-1 and looking like they were in trouble, and he held the Ford down for four innings as they batted back, tied the game, took the lead. And it's not always as simple as it sounds, but with Devin Fontenot, it kind of is. When he throws strikes and he attacks the strike zone and, you know, he's feeling confident out there, he's really good. I mean, his stuff's electric. He throws in the mid-90s. He's got a decent off-speed pitch that he can mix in there when he needs to. But I thought he was really good. And to me, him, the way he threw, and the fact that Cole Henry got through it healthy, where, you know, obviously they wanted to win because it's a single elimination game and they needed to give themselves a few more days to kind of try to beef up that resume in terms of hosting an NCAA regional. But I thought Fontenot was just electric last night, and it kind of reminded me of where he looked in the middle of the season, where he was probably their best pitcher at one point.
Talking LSU baseball with James Moran. He's the editor of Tiger Ag Magazine. He's also live in Hoover, Alabama. We'll fast forward to tonight. LSU's already announced Eric Walker will get the pill, and Mississippi State, James, going with freshman righty Brandon Smith. He's been pretty good this year, 3-0 for the year, 3.13 ERA. Give me some thoughts on that matchup and how LSU and Mississippi State match up at large.
Well, I think if you're LSU, you probably, you know, look, you always are just going to face whoever they run out there. But I think if you're LSU, you're probably feeling pretty good that they didn't decide to bring back Ethan Small for this game. LSU has at times had issues with lefties. They didn't last week, strangely enough. They handled two of Auburn's lefties pretty well, but at times this year, they've had trouble with southpaws, and Ethan Small might be the nastiest lefty in the country. I think he's struck out 139 batters this year in 80-something innings. So not seeing him is a big plus. I can't tell you much about Brandon Smith. I don't know much about him. I've never seen him pitch. But LSU normally tends – I imagine he's a relatively hard-throwing right-hander, and those are the guys LSU seems to deal with pretty well. In terms of Eric Walker – obviously, Mississippi State is a loaded offense. They were the highest scoring team in the SEC this year. But for what it's worth, he did throw, I want to say, seven shutout innings in Starkville when LSU won two out of three. So in terms of the pitching matchup, I think considering LSU's already had to play a game and Mississippi State hasn't, you kind of have to feel pretty good about how that sets up for them today.
And you look at the rest of the path, the Tigers either get Auburn or Vandy tomorrow. We just watched them take two out of three from Auburn. Currently, Vandy, I know, is leading 3-0 in the bottom of the third. What would a matchup with either of those two look like, considering that Landon Marceau would get the start?
Well, I would be fascinated. If LSU's able to win tonight and, let's say, Vanderbilt wins, seeing Landon Marceau pitch to that Vanderbilt lineup would just be fascinating. You know, he seems like a guy that's really hitting his stride. I mean, I thought he was absolutely dominant against Auburn last week. He was, you know, seven innings of one-run ball. All he gave up was a solo home run. But that Vanderbilt team can absolutely mash. I mean, I think J.J. Bleday is probably the best power hitter in the league, if not the country. He had 25 bombs this year. I want to say they had three different guys driving more than 60 runs, and they got a leadoff hitter in Austin Martin who hit north of 430 this year. So the Commodores can score a lot of runs when that offense gets going. And to see Marceau match up with them would be a fascinating little preview for the guy that I don't know how LSU's going to set things up for a regional, but my money would be on Landon Marceau pitching that Marble game, that Saturday game in the winner's bracket, if LSU kind of had a chance to draw things up as they like to. I mean, I just think he's throwing the ball really well. He's mixing in that curveball, and that changeup is really nasty, especially to left-handers. His velocity is better than it's been all year. Auburn would be a fine matchup for LSU. That more likely, I guess, would be in an elimination game. But if you're kind of thinking this with an eye towards the hosting, Texas A&M did lose earlier. That's a team that LSU is kind of jockeying with for position. So if LSU could get a win tonight, I think they would kind of maybe move ahead of them in the pecking order and kind of have a chance to, obviously then with Marceau on the mound tomorrow night, pitch themselves into the weekend, and that would obviously be ideal considering they really used up Fontenot last night. Peterson also threw more than two innings. You'd expect to see Zach Hess tonight if LSU has a lead. That would be pretty interesting considering the struggles he's had recently, though he said he seems to think that he has kind of figured out what's been going on. It's more an issue of pitch sequencing than the pitches being ineffective themselves, just teams sitting on his fastball and him maybe throwing too many of them in predictable counts. But it's going to be interesting. I think really what was another thing that was important about last night is LSU really wants to see Walker and Marceau get another start against big-time competition before the NCAA tournament begins. And obviously by winning last night, you know Walker's getting a big-time opponent in Mississippi State. If they can win and maybe match up Marceau with Vanderbilt, I think that would probably be the best-case scenario.
Very well put. And, James, the calling card of this show, we try to lead and end with the most important questions. With that in mind, is there really a guy named James Moran that is an MLB scout at Hoover this week?
Apparently, because when I went up to get my credential yesterday, they said, no, are you the scout? You just got your credentials. I was mighty perplexed, to be honest with you. I had just driven 5.5 hours from Baton Rouge to scenic Hoover. I was trying to get my credential and get in there with plenty of time before LSU South Carolina. And when I got hit with that, I was just like, no, that ain't me. That's my name. But I promise you I am an amateur scout at the very kindest definition of things. So, yeah, if somehow James Moran, the scout, is listening to this, if he wants to give me a shout and we can talk about being James Moran, that would be fine with me. But, turns out there's more than one of us in Hoover this week. And I don't know what that means, but it's a fun fact, I guess.
I absolutely love it. And we've been having a great conversation with James Moran, the sports writer. And you know we appreciate it every time you come on, James.
No problem, Ben. I always enjoy it, buddy. I guess we'll be talking next week before an NCAA regional.
There you go. Hey, enjoy your stay at Hoover. We'll be following the coverage.
Thanks, Ben. Talk to you next week, buddy. Enjoy your weekend.
That's fantastic. Just an absolute, almost like a being John Malkovich type moment right there. Just two guys that walk into a bar. I'm James Moran. No, sir, I am James Moran. I love that. No, you're already here, guy. You're already here. No, I'm not. I just arrived. Are you James Moran, the scout? That must have been a great moment at the table. I would have paid to have seen it. I'll be right back in. We got more coming at you. This is B2BS. That's Bumper to Bumper Sports, wrapping up next on 103.7 The Game.
red zone specialist. You don't like we don't want to bang those guys around too much because they got long careers in basketball. But I'm just thinking, just a couple fades, you know, back corner of the end zone. I'm sure those guys would like just jumping up and snatching one out of there. I don't think there's many guys that could jump with those guys out there.
Drew Brees last night while in Lafayette discussing what position that Zion Williamson would play with the Saints. I'm right there with him. Red zone specialist. Bumper to Bumper Sports back with you for the final time on 103.7 The Game. Clint, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, we also heard there the faint laughter of one George Faust.
Yeah, that was Fausty.
Okay.
I was like just right next to him. So, yeah, you got everything of Fausty there.
What was that like for you since you've been in this media biz? It's got to be a top moment for you, interviewing Drew Brees, being that close to a living legend, future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that definitely is probably the top moment. I think I can gladly retire on top now, hypothetically speaking. Of course, I won't. But, you know, that was really cool. And then also getting him to record that liner that we've been throwing out there throughout the day today. That was probably the most killer part of it all.
In the time that I've worked here, I have never once held a mic in somebody's face and said, could you please say the... You're listening to 103.7 The Game part. How did that go for you when you asked for that?
Oh, I mean, I already had it kind of written down beforehand. I was like, hey, you know, Drew, can we get this done real quick? I work with 103.7 The Game. And then he's like, sure, man, but we got to make it quick. Because, I mean, dude was there like probably from about 6 o'clock, like getting questions from the kids for like almost an hour and a half. It was just basically like he wanted to go. It was like, I'm done. Kudos
to you for having it typed up.
Yeah.
And always big ups to that guy because I've seen it as well firsthand. When he came through the walk-ons in Lafayette on Collie Saloon, and I did my live show from there.
I remember that.
Wow. It was like having to part the Red Sea to get that guy. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Okay, so they had done it the night before. He was doing a walk-ons tour throughout the state. I'm pretty sure it was the night prior that they did the show in Bossier.
Yep.
Or Shreveport. It was a walk-ons in one of those two cities never go to unless I had to for money. Anyway. You know what I'm talking about. Don't live in Bossier City, Shreveport. No, I'm done with that. So he
Shame
did
was 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, he did his bit from up there. They came to Lafayette, and I remember the walk-ons manager at the time coming on the mic when their place was just absolutely silly packed. People out of the door. People were parking across the street just to walk over. And I remember the manager came on the mic and said, look, we did this last night in whatever city it was out of those two. And people came to Drew. That didn't work out well. We will come to you. So stay where you are. So imagine walking into walk-ons on Collie Saloon and literally you can't move. Like Mardi Gras style in the French Quarter.
Yep.
People are packing every crevice that's not literally a table or a chair. And in some cases, they were just stacking chairs on top of each other, getting out of the way to make more room for human beings to stand. So I get how that was more efficient because they said it was just a nightmare the night prior where everybody was – they said Drew didn't leave. He couldn't move like the singular spot that he was in for like 2 hours because people just kept coming for the autographs, the pictures and all that. But when I tell you that that man made his way throughout every nook and cranny of the restaurant portion, of the glassed-in bar portion around the back, it was remarkable. He took a picture. Signed an autograph with every single person there. He even walked by and could see that I was literally doing a radio show, and so he gave me a little dap on the way through. It's a gift to be that freaking famous and make sure that everybody in a room still feels you and gets a chance to experience what you bring to the room. I'm telling you, it was pretty impressive. So I don't know what your experience last night was like relative to that, but it's good that you got to break down into a media format for a while.
Yeah, exactly. It was really cool. We didn't expect that. But again, we got like 10 minutes with them. And before that, like, he took pictures with every single team that was involved with football in America, which, by the way, absolutely love the abbreviation for that being FNA. I absolutely love that. It was fantastic.
We do that.
Yeah, exactly. But this is we do Football Night at KDN, a little bit different, but still really cool stuff going on with Drew Brees. It was really awesome. We talk about how the fact he takes pictures with everybody. He waited for everybody to take pictures as well because, obviously, he got the parents and it's all team photos. He waited until everybody else was done taking pictures and all that. I mean, in fact, right before I got that liner, somebody wanted a selfie from him, and he's like, no problem, man. And then I was like the last one to kind of bother him.
Do you feel as if you might have messed up? My final question for you in the Drew Brees situation. knowing that you could have had the Clint and Drew Brees selfie and you asked for the station liner, knowing that you could have done one or the other but not both, in retrospect, did you mess that up?
No, I didn't, because I feel like if I did ask for the selfie, I would have messed that up more from a media perspective. If I was there solely as a fan, you bet your bottom dollar I'm going to get that rather than the liner, but I'm there in a media like aspect as opposed to like me being a person who's just a fan of Drew Brees and wants to get a selfie with him. Maybe next time.
This might be the most respect I've had for you in 4 years of knowing you.
I appreciate that,
This very moment. I'll never forget covering LSU Penn State, and they're playing a bowl game in – I'm getting older, Clint. You got to help me out here. It was muddy. It was Orlando. That's where we were. Yep, okay. That's exactly where we were. It was the 2010 Capital One Bowl in Orlando.
Yep.
And after the game was over, I will not say the name. People listening would probably know this human being. LSU beat writer X walked up to Joe Paterno and asked for an autograph. And I remember just thinking to myself, that's not why we're here.
Exactly.
You know, I don't feel good about that.
I guess. Media
Unless you represent some kind of charity, and even then, that's probably not the time and place and the forum to do that in.
Exactly.
But unless somehow, some way. Look, the person was not Jacques Doucet, but I'm going to use him as an example. Knowing how much good he does for people in the military with the Red Rock and Blue charity. Maybe you could say, look, we're going to raffle this off. But even then, that's not the space where you would do that. And somebody like JD never would do that. So
you do that during the off season.
Yeah. You got to find your own way to do that. Go through the SID or something like that. So
basically,
there you go. Clint's time with Drew Brees, and he did the professional thing. Good on you. All right, we're almost out of time. Got to thank our guest today, Shay Dixon, on a Wednesday. It felt a little weird, but still, oh so right. To flip the script. If you missed it, it's a lot of my thoughts on LSU basketball recruiting over about a 15 or 20-year period. Also, reaction to one SEC staffer anonymously telling a Summer Mag that Dave Aranda's defense might be down a little bit this year. So we flipped the script. Those topics and more with Shay Dixon in the 4 o'clock hour. And then James Moran, you just heard him, our good friend from Tiger Rag Magazine, gave us a preview of LSU Mississippi State. Both of those interviews on demand right now for you at 1037thegame.com and via the free mobile app. All right, 2 hours have come and gone. Five Guys Stories and Lies is next, followed by LSU Mississippi State. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, and tomorrow, start at 4, we will be at the Taproom River Ranch on 1037 The Game.